I'm Talita Holtman, and I am an alcoholic. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
I'm sober tonight because God is helping me to stay sober. I often laugh at people when they come and pat you on the back, particularly in your early days, and say, "Oh, you're doing a wonderful job." I says, "Heavens above, if I was doing it, it would be a mess, because it was really a mess when I was tending to it." I was born in Mexico, in the southern part, left there during Villa's time for the adjoining Republic of Guatemala, and then came to this country. My father was American, my mother was Spanish, and he brought us here to be educated in English. And I was about 10, and I didn't have any hang-ups about drinking because my formative years were spent in a culture where we had wine with our meals, and we didn't think it was a sin to drink. And I came to the little town of Smithville, Georgia. My American grandmother lived there. And there I went to school, and I started trying to prove something. I don't know whether it was because I was strange. I was very dark at the time, coming from the tropics. I had real long hair, and my mother persisted in plaiting it on each side. And I didn't look like the rest of the American girls. But down in Guatemala, we had been considered Americans because my father was American. He worked with United Fruit Company, so we were always at the United Fruit Company Club, and we were considered Americans. And I didn't like the idea of being considered that little Spanish girl. And I couldn't speak English. And you know how cruel children are to one another. And I was just, they were just constantly picking at me, so I would say something and they could laugh. So I decided, well, I'll show you what I can do. So in 3 months, I made 3 grades. I swapped swapped languages because I had been to school there. And I moved on up that pace. When I got in high school, I made 2 grades in high school. Some of the classes I couldn't even attend because I had so many classes, and I just did written work on it, and then I took examinations. So I don't know whether it was that alcoholic drive or what it was, but anyway, I was always trying to prove something. And after graduating from high school, I had a scholarship to Oglethorpe University to teach spoken Spanish. I could speak it fluently then. And I got married in August instead. I was in love with this boy from Eufaula, and he was a Baptist, and I was a Catholic. And we were poles apart there, but we got real close together when we started drinking. He was an alcoholic, too. And after getting to Eufaula, we were invited to parties. And that first September, though, when I was sitting on the front porch rocking on the rocking chair with my mother-in-law, who disliked me very much, and everybody was leaving for college, I nearly died. I thought, well, now, what have I done? And so when we were invited to these parties, we didn't drink. My husband thought it was a sin. But I'd hear about what a good time everybody had, and everybody jumped in the pool at the country club with all the clothes on and all that stuff. And I've always been the kind that wanted to be right in the middle of things. And if there's anything crazy, I certainly want to be there. So I began begging my husband at the next party, let's take a drink. I was naive. And he'd say no. So we were invited to this cocktail party. We were going to a dance afterwards on Thanksgiving Day. And I started. And I said, Ambrose, listen. It's not any more than just a little bit, just a tiny bit. About a cocktail is not any more than a eggnog at Christmas time. He said, I don't care. I'm not going to live with a drinking woman. So I got to the party, and being the hothead that I am, I just decided I'd get a drink and see what he'd do about it. So he didn't do anything. He's a very nice person. And not there, anyway. So I took the second one, and I took the third one, and it was the grandest feeling I've ever had. So when we got home, he started looking up his post office certificate. People used to save money in post office then, and we had a little. And I asked him what he was doing, and he said that's what he was doing. He was fixing to leave. He was not going to live with a drinking woman. Well, do you know that we don't remember when he took his first drink? And we certainly don't remember when we became alcoholics. We went through that period of problems. You know, going to a football game and getting mixed up. He'd come back one way and I'd come back the other. That Georgia Auburn game was the main one. We never could get back together. We'd go out to the club to dance. And I remember one night he went out on the golf course and went to bed, went to sleep. And I couldn't find him, so somebody took me home. The next morning he came in, he had on his tuxedo, and he said that he found his glasses where he had taken them off and put them right on the tee there. And the sun was shining in his face, just such doings as that. And we had three children. At the time I took this first drink and made up my mind that I was going to be a drinking woman, I had three children. My youngest was a year old. And it seems like we went fast, real fast. My house became just like a club or a roadhouse or something. You could find people there at any hour of the day or night. And it was a terrible looking sight because there was a young doctor there that came back. He had been at Mayo's. And he came by the house one night and he had just gotten home and he came, put his arm around me and said, Talita, come out here. I want to show you something. And I went out on the porch and he said, I want you to look. Cars were just as far, clean to Miss Louise Fluellen's. I'm saying this because there's a person here that knows where that is. And cars just both sides, the yard was filled. He said, now, you know, that looks terrible. See, he hadn't been in Eufaula. That's just how it looked every night. He just had gotten home. He said, Salita, this is a home. You have three children. And this is awful. I mean, he said, I went out to the club, but I couldn't find anybody there. And I knew where they were. And he said, I like them all. They're all cute people and everything. He says, but this is your home. You don't want it like this. And I said, oh, Ed, come on in. Let's go take a drink. So we went on in, took a drink. That was the last of that. Some people tried, just like he did. A lady told me one time, says, Salita, aren't you drinking too much? And I said, no. I don't go out and kick up my heels like I used to. This was right at the last. I only drink for medicinal purposes. And I was at that time drinking for medicinal purposes, just to live. But I did all those crazy things that all of us have done. I went out to energizing of the REA line one time. My husband was working for the line. And he told me to be sure not to take a drink before I came. So I didn't only go drinking, but I got up as many drunks as I could, and you followed to go with me. And that's very easy at home. The car was full, and we were all drunk. But I was the only one that managed to jump in this Blue Springs, they called it, and it's very cold water. And I was the only one in swimming with my clothes on. Somebody asked my husband, says, "Who in the world is that lady?" I've often thought about them calling me a lady. They say she's from Eufaula. Ambrose said, "I don't know the lady." Later on, after everybody had gone home, of course, I went home one way, he got there the other way, and he got drunk. So that thing just went on, seesaw. I was drunk one time, maybe he was sober, and he was drunk one time, and then I'd be sober, and I'd be mad. And we were constantly jawing at each other, and sometimes we were both drunk. And don't forget that I had those three children. And it was really just a house. It wasn't a home. Of course, when I was sober, I was a periodic drinker. I didn't stay drunk day in and day out. And when I'd have my sober periods, I'd do just like all alcoholics, just work myself to death and do the nicest things and fix my children's clothes up and do all that. And then I'd pat myself on the back for being so smart and get drunk again. And the same old thing, just going round and round. I have had teeth pulled, good teeth, to cover up drunks. I had a bunch to come in from Clayton, Alabama. It isn't very far from Eufaula one time. And we were going out to the club to dance. And I wasn't able to put on my evening dress. So I just put on a hat. I had on just an ordinary dress, and so I just put on a hat and appeared as though I had just arrived from somewhere. So I had this great big hat, and I'm so little, and imagine how I look. But sometime during the dance, I took it off and threw it in the fireplace, and it burned up. And as I was throwing it, my feet went out from under me, and I fell sprawling. And those were just things that happened all the time. So the next day, I realized that these were not my regular drinking buddies that were used to all this stuff. They were not Eufaula people. And I had to cover up. So we had at the time two or three dentists. And I went all the way to Clayton, Alabama to get a dentist to pull a tooth out. And they had one. To cover up, I called this friend of mine and I told her to try to make me an appointment. And she said, "Well, Salita, are you coming all the way over here?" I said, "Louise, I'll have to. I'm just nearly dead, and I just can't stand these folks over here. I'm going to just use that man all the time anyway." So she got the appointment. I went over there, and I told her that that's what had happened to me the day before. That's why I couldn't get my evening dress on. That I had had this horrible toothache, and that after I got to the dance, I had to keep drinking in order to stay at the dance. So after I used that tooth pulling that time, and it worked out so good, they believed it, I just pulled it over and over. I had more good teeth pulled, I'm telling you the truth. And I don't know why I started picking on teeth. I guess because I had such good ones, and I thought I'd always have them. Now I have false ones, and I wish I had some of those teeth. I was in an accident later and lost my teeth, and I almost got resentful, and I thought, that was after I got an AA, a year after I got an AA, and I thought, "You crazy fool, just remember all those good ones you had pulled out, drunk." But things just couldn't keep on like they were. So finally, Ambrose was sober for about 3 months, and I continued drinking. So he just got a divorce on the grounds of habitual drunkenness. And that would give him my children. And I was advised not to fight it, because I could get in court and prove him out of the habitual drunkard. And then the children wouldn't have anybody, because it goes down on record. And then there they just have two SOBs for parents. So I just didn't fight it. So I went on and went to Atlanta and worked at a hospital. They fired me very nicely. I was drunk at the admittance desk at St. Joseph's Hospital one day. And this sister came by and saw me. She called me to the office. And she said, "Salita, I think that you are too depressed to work in a hospital. and I'm going to talk to one of the doctors and see if I can't get you a job in a happy place. So she did, and they got me a job at East Lake Country Club. But do you know that I managed that thing beautifully? I never got fired from that place. I just got sick and would admit myself to the hospital. I'd just get in the hospital. I'd call the sisters and I'd say, "Sister, I am so sick." And of course, I'd have a hangover or either be real drunk or something. And I got by with it. Well, that was 2 years. And I adored this Ambrose. And I just wanted to remarry him so bad. And I'd call him drunk. And of course, that was the thing to do, wasn't it? And I'd say, "Well, don't you love me a little bit?" And he'd say, "Hell no." And, "Do you feel divorced?" "I don't." And all that kind of stuff. But one time, I went to your father to see the children, and for some unknown reason, I was sober. And do you know what? He was drunk. So he asked me to remarry him, and I had been waiting for that. So I said, "Yes, I sure will." So we had long talks. He came to Atlanta to see me, and we had long talks about this whiskey business. It had been the cause of everything in our life, and we would never take another drink. We were going to be remarried, but we were never going to take another drink. So we were remarried in Atlanta, and when we arrived in Eufaula, well, some of the club members had a luncheon for me out at East Lake. And it was on Sunday, but they could get whiskey. So, of course, it was so nice to do this, we had to take a drink. So they also got a bottle for us. And we arrived home drunk. And these three little children that had been without a mother for 2 years, looking forward to seeing their home all mended and whatnot, look just sick. We were both dead dog drunk. From then on, it was just terrible. I mean, we didn't go out very much. I was drinking for medicinal purposes. Ambrose was too. My oldest child wrote my sister, who was at Biloxi, Mississippi at the time. Her husband was in the army there. A very tragic letter. She said, "Who do you talk to about your parents? Who can you talk to about your parents?" Says, "I never know when to bring anyone home. I never know what's going to happen around here." And at the time, she was 16. And she said, "I think that I will just kill myself. I have given it a lot of thought." So this alarmed my sister. Of course, the whole family knew about the drinking and everything. So she phoned immediately, and she talked to me, and she said, "Now, Selena, my husband's going to be transferred to Washington State, and I'll be down here alone. And I have this house, and I want little Selena to come down and stay with me, and I will assume all responsibilities for her clothes. I will send her a ticket to come down. She can go sailing. She can do things that she doesn't get to do in Eufaula, and it will be just wonderful for her. And it won't cost you a penny." So I told her I'd talk it over with Ambrose. Sounded good to me. So I did, and he said, oh, he thought it'd be wonderful. And I think it was because it'd be more money to drink whiskey. I really do. That we thought it was wonderful for her, because that would be one less child. So it wasn't long before Selena got her sister down there. And it never occurred to me that my sister had put both of the children in a boarding school at Bay St. Louis, which is real near Biloxi. But I mean, you know, it never occurred to me that it wasn't to keep her company after all, because she had put little Selena in a boarding school, a Catholic convent. And so they stayed there, and I was real, real drunk one Christmas before they were to come home. And I had worn out old hospitals and old doctors, and certainly I couldn't pay them. Mr. Haltman had had a very good reputation for paying and a very honest man, and Ambrose had the same name. So everybody just let us have what we wanted. And we owed three banks. There was just three banks in the county. If there had been more, we would have owed more. Ambrose often said he was so thankful there wasn't but three banks at the time. But I don't know why people let it. They knew what was taking place, but they just let us have everything we wanted. And so I couldn't get myself in the hospital. So I called this lady who was a school teacher, had been a school teacher, had taught my husband, many others older, marvelous person. And I'll never forget how she answered me. I was dead dog drunk. And I said, "Miss Annie, can you please get me in the hospital? I have been drinking, and I want to sober up. The children are coming home for Christmas, and I don't want them to find me this way." "Why, sure, honey, I'd be glad to." She acted like that was her regular job, getting drunks in the hospital. So I said, "Now, Miss Annie, you're going to have to pay for it, but I've got a silver coffee pot. There's an antique coffee pot that's been in Ambrose's family. And I would be glad to let you have that until I can pay." He said, "Oh, that's all right, honey. Don't mind that at all." Well, I stayed in the hospital and I got sober, but I didn't feel right because they gave me all these pills. And incidentally, I was taking the pills then. I was taking all the pills. I was swapping from one to the other. And so when I came out, I called them. And I said, "Miss Annie, I want to tell you something. I have found out that drinking doesn't help me. But I don't feel right, and I think I'm crazy. And will you please help me to get in Tuscaloosa after Christmas, after the children go back?" And she said, "I'd be glad to, Selena." And I said, "Well, I realize one thing, that whiskey doesn't help whatever's the matter with me because I don't feel right, and I'm sober." And, of course, I didn't feel right. I'd gotten home. I didn't have any more pills to take, and I had to get up some pills, too. And so she promised that, but I couldn't call her back. The children came home. They had a nice Christmas. And on the 28th, well, on the 25th, maybe some of you have heard Father Fred tell this. He's the priest that was there at the time. It was his first parish. And I was a drunk that was giving him so much trouble. And he didn't know what to do about it. On Christmas Day, we decided we'd make some silly bub. And I don't know whether you know what silly bub is or not. That is milk and cream and just a tiny, not as much whiskey as you have in eggnog. And you have a silly bub churn, and it's kind of like that cotton candy. It just melts in your mouth. It's foam. That's what it is. And that is all we had. But we built our fire. On the 28th, Ambrose went to the blue and gray game in Montgomery. He came back drunk and found me drunk. When the children went back to school, I couldn't go to the train to put them on the train. The children wished that Ambrose hadn't tried to go. He went, and he got on the train. There were a lot of girls going back to Huntington and Montgomery to school, and they were very embarrassed. He said, "Selita, here's a dollar for you, and Gwen, here's a dollar for you." And the whole train heard it. Took the rest of the money that the children were supposed to have, got whiskey, came back to the house. Well, that one was the last one, and it was the best one because it got me here. It lasted 10 days. Ambrose was riding a motorcycle. He was working in Clayton, Alabama, and riding every day drunk and back. And I was at home, horizontal. I couldn't get up. And given bad checks to get the taxicabs to bring me the whiskey. And trying to get somebody to come out there, but I couldn't. But I couldn't call Miss Annie, because I had told her that I had found out whiskey didn't help me, and I wasn't going to drink anymore. And I just couldn't call her. So I'd call different people, and they'd say, well, we'll be out there later. But they never came. And finally, there was a girl that lived way down the street, used to pass by there, a disreputable character. And I thought about her, and I thought, well, now she'll be just complimented me calling her up to come up here. So I called her. She was really a woman of the streets. So I called her, and she said, yes, later I'll come up there. And she came. She took one look at me and left. She didn't even sit down. I said, sit down, I won't talk to you. She said, well, listen, I'll be back. I got somewhere to go, and I haven't seen her since. And so I just couldn't get anybody there. And I thought, well, now I can't call Miss Annie and ask her to help me get in the asylum, but I'm certainly crazy. I knew I was drinking against my will. So I'll just call the probate judge. I'd heard you had to get him to send you to the asylum. And he told me to have a doctor there. And I asked him if he would please call the doctor, because my doctor wouldn't come, my family doctor wouldn't come. So he did, and they were there at a certain time, one on one side of the bed and one on the other. And my doctor said, she's not crazy. She's just got to leave this damn whiskey alone. That's all the matter with the leader. Well, I looked at those two men with tears streaming down my eyes. Looked at one and looked at the other. And you will never know how hopeless I felt. That was my last straw. And I just felt like, oh, heavens above. And it didn't make, I didn't know a thing about AA then, or that I was a sick person. But it made as much sense to me as if that man had said I had TB and had to get up and get over it. Because I knew I couldn't do it. And they left. After that, I don't remember much. I remember seeing a note from my little boy. He was only 10 then. And he was left there, nobody to get him out of the mess. So he wrote a note and said, I have gone to grandmother's. I can't stand it any longer. He had been out of school for days trying to, I would beg him not to go. You know how alone we are, how scared we are. And he walked from Eufaula to Clayton, Alabama, because there was no money in that house. So I was there, when I saw that, I was just desperate. In that condition, I thought of an article in Reader's Digest that I had read months back. It had something about alcoholics. And I also, at the same time, remembered a certain man from Eufaula that had gone to Birmingham, and I had heard that he had joined something. And it kind of sounded like what I had read, and wasn't drinking anymore. Now, thoughts like that can't come into anybody's mind who was as drunk as I was. So that's where my children come in. They had been praying for a year. They went to Catholic school, went to Mass every morning. And my daughter wrote me after I got in AA that she had been praying with sacrifice, didn't have any sugar for a whole year, not a thing sweet, that King Alcohol would be dethroned from her home or abdicate of his own accord. That's what she wrote. And I really think that it was the answer to those children's prayers. God loves children's prayers. And I think that's where the message came from. It was the answer to that prayer. Because when I called, I was getting the Automobile Association. That was in 1946, January the 6th, 1946. And there wasn't very much. AA was just 2 years old in Montgomery at the time. And when we got the bill, my husband said he thought I started in from California and moved into Alabama. Because, but there was 6 or 7 times Columbus and all these places, you know, where I'd get the Automobile Association. I don't know whether I was so drunk I was putting an extra A, or they weren't familiar with it and giving it an extra A. But finally, I made contact with Montgomery, and they told me that I called three times before they could understand my name. I was that drunk. I had clawed my legs where blood was just, dripping down from the water like waiting for that cab. And when I made that contact, they let me speak to this lady who was the only woman in a van. She was visiting. And she said that they would be there the next day. And she told me later that I said, "Can I depend on that?" And I didn't think I could depend on anybody coming there. And when I say this, a lot of people don't take it literally, but I say it to be literal. The only way that anybody, if we had died in that house drunk, would have known that we were dead, would have been from the odor of our bodies. And I mean that literally. That house had been just left completely alone. Didn't anybody call or anything. I had friends that were grieving over the whole situation, but there wasn't anything they could do. And she asked me if I had whiskey, and that sounded good, and told me to keep drinking, unless she was the only person that told me that. So I had some whiskey because my husband was always able to get out and get whiskey, but I wasn't. So he was real drunk, and the people came, and he was too drunk to go, so they hauled me out and took me to a little hospital in Prattville, Alabama, just above Montgomery, but it was in a home, and this doctor was sympathetic towards alcoholics. That was the era where you had to really look for a place to put one. And the AAs from Montgomery came to see me. Well, they gave me the cold turkey treatment. I was 37 at the time, and he told me that he thought that I could stand it. And I said, "Yes, but they told me you'd give pills or you'd give a little whiskey." And he said, "Well, I think you can stand it." I said, "Yes, sir." Well, my heart was in my throat, and these AAs would come, and they looked so happy. They were beautiful people, just beautiful. And talk about the time that this one was held on the bed with eight bodyguards, guards holding him down on the bed. He was about to jump off the bed, and I thought, well, I'm not. One told me he'd been sober 2 years. He was secretary of the club at the time, Charlie Abercrombie. Maybe some of you have heard him. And I thought, 2 years? Ooh, that sounded like a lifetime, you know. And they would worry me with that talking because I was so nervous. But do you know what? I'd remember what they said that at night because I certainly wasn't sleeping. I remember. And I got out of the hospital, went home, and then went back to my first meeting at there's something I must go back and tell. Because to show you just what it took for me, my own mother during that drunk wouldn't come. I phoned her, and it was the first time she refused to come. The priest, that mean priest, Father Frederick, he came up there, and I asked him to hear my confession because I knew I was going to die. And he said it wouldn't be valid. I was drunk. I said, "Well, Father, what must I do? Bust hell wide open?" And he says, "Yes, I think you will, and as far as I'm concerned, it's all right with me." And slammed the door. Now, when your priest, your friends, everybody in town, but then your priest and your own mother. So it just took all that for me. But with all that it took for me, it was exactly 1 week when I was in an AA club, and it was not a meeting, it was just a bunch of people drinking coffee, sort of a get-together. And these people were talking about DTs, and one was talking about having gone to the asylum, and in those days, there weren't many younger people coming in. They just grabbed it the last go-around. They were real old. And I thought, well, I don't belong with this outfit. Now, I have drunk a lot of whiskey, But you know there's nobody any sober than somebody that's just been sober a few days. And I wouldn't even get up for a cup of coffee or anything. I was kind of embarrassed to be with this situation, you know, talking about DTs and being drunk and all that stuff. And so quickly forgot that I was trying to get in the insane asylum just a few days back. Just forgot all about it. I was sober. But I'm afraid I'm dwelling too much on my story because I could go on here all night long. But these people gave me some pamphlets. There was one that helped me more than anything. It was out of Yale. At the time, Yale had been doing research on alcoholism since 1929, and this was 46. And one of the little pamphlets was out of Yale, and it said that they had come to one conclusion, and that was that the alcoholics, all of them, were exceptional, just exceptional people. I thought I was a bum, and the crazy one at that. That helped me a lot, to think that I had something to me. And you have often heard the remark, the best doctor in town if you can catch him sober. The best mechanic in town if you can catch him sober. The best painter in town if you can catch him sober. So I think that was through research, and I guess it is so. So that made me feel very good. And they told me that I must come back to meetings. This lady asked me how I liked it, and I told her, all right. They had been for me all the way to Eufaula, so I thought I'd be nice to them and go back and, you know, sort of pay them back. And so I went by bus every week, and that was hard, awfully hard, to get up the money for me to get on that bus. Because as soon as people found out we were sober, every bill collector in town was there. Well, Ambrose was in Clayton, and I was catching it. They were just knocking at the door. Some were nice and some weren't. But I know one thing, I wasn't telling those lies about we'll be there next week or we're coming the first of the month. I told them the truth. I told them we couldn't pay them. But we were going to if we lived long enough. And in that way, we finally did. But the crowd in Montgomery had to hear me, you know, cry on their shoulders about our circumstances. And they'd say, Salita, you're going uphill. Do it one day at a time. Things will come along, and I'd think, oh, my stars, just theirs was different. Mine was different. We couldn't possibly get out of the mess we were in. The girls were becoming young ladies and needing more. And we had assumed the responsibility of that school down there. And I just didn't see how we could come out of it. But it works. It works. I was 37 then, and I'm 63 now, and I feel much better than I felt when I went into AA. Feel much younger. And I know that I'm happier, and spiritually, that's just nothing like what we can find in this program. They told me to do it one day at a time. They told me to thank God every night, to ask Him every morning. And that was my only beginning. That was the very first beginning. And it works. Now, I had been a very religious person. I went to church religiously, drunk also. And so I get that some way or other. But I have often said this, and I really believe it from the bottom of my heart, that we alcoholics seek a higher spiritual level than the ordinary person. I really believe that, because we just have to have a personal God. And it's been all the difference in the world in the God I work it with my faith. But I was telling the girls in the room that it is I used a word then, I can't use it again. I just can't express the kind of God that we have in AA, but you people know what I'm talking about. And it does remind me of maybe a crippled person going down the street, and somebody well is trying to help him, and just shrugs his shoulder and tries to get up by himself. God's the same way. He's always been there. He's always been there, ready to help us, but we just shrugged our shoulders. So all in the world that I had to do was just let him. And that's all we all have to do. Just give him a little chance. He'd be glad to help us up. And my years in AA have been happy years, but all the bad, terrible, tragic things have happened since I've been sober. And that prayer, God grant me the serenity to accept things I cannot change, courage to change things I can, and wisdom to know the difference, has carried me through the death of my son, the little boy that I made his childhood so unhappy and was so hard to see him die 3 months before he graduated from college. The first time I talked after his death, I just broke down and cried. But I cannot carry something that I cannot undo. But he was the happiest little boy, though, when we got in AA, when he met our sponsors. He said, "Mr. and Ms. Murphy, I'm so glad to know you. You made our house a home." He's 10 years old now. "You made our house a home." And the first Christmas, we put on evening clothes to go out. "Mama, this is the first Christmas I can ever remember being happy about Daddy putting on his tuxedo and you putting on your evening dress." I said, "Why, buddy, you've seen us go out and be all right." He said, "No, ma'am." And I started counting, and that little boy never remembered us going out and coming back all right. Came back fighting, dead dog drunk, one at 3 o'clock, the other one at 5, or next day or something like that. And that's what he said, and it dawned on me that he didn't remember. So my husband died, and he was sick for 6 years. That prayer. And the Lord's Prayer, "Thy will be done." I said that just as often as I breathe. "Thy will be done." And with those two things, you can meet anything. I have been able to meet those two tragic things and other things too, but I think I've used up my time, haven't I? I can't say enough for this program. I just wish that I could give everybody in the world a shot of it. Just a shot in the arm of it. Because of the difference between living, really living. I think the world is looking for what we have. Because I have friends that are not alcoholics, and I honestly feel sorry for them. Because I can see how they mull and get all twisted and worked up and whatnot. I get worked up all right. And you know how we alcoholics are. I mean, we're very highly strung people and a few other things. I don't know where everybody is now, but I am. But with this program, I'm able to take care of Salita through any situation. And she is a hard person to manage, I tell you. I have a terrific ego, and it just comes up all the time. It even came up in AA. I was the founder of the group at home, and I was the first one to start sobering up people. So they were all my babies, and boy, I ruled them with an iron hand. I told them when to jump, they better jump. I even resented some of their wives telling them to do something else. So, you know what happened? I went to Montgomery one time to speak, and it was the first time I'd been out of town where they had a meeting. And you know what they did? They elected a new secretary. I came back to you follow, and one of the wives called me that just, oh, she just thought I was grand because I had helped her husband. You see, Charlie Abercrombie always says, "Let men tend to men and let women tend to women. Don't get it all mixed up," and it won't do. But my husband was in in Clayton, and if I couldn't get Father Frederick or this Methodist minister there to help me, I had to go alone. And it was usually the men. The women are the last ones to call, because they could stay at home dead dog drunk, nobody knows them. And so I just lost what I was fixing to say. Well, it'll come after a while. I was fixing to say something particular, and I can't think of it now. While I was sailing the other, I thought about that. Huh? Oh, yes. I called Father Fred. Thank you. I was going to tell everybody from your fault to please get up and leave in Columbus, too, because they've heard this story and can tell it as well as I can. But I called Father Fred. And I said, Father Fred, you know what's happened? I was just weeping. Those people that I have helped and have done so much for and stayed up with and all that, carried them to hospitals and all, waited until I got out of town and elected a new secretary. He said, well, Selena, do you think they could have done it with you in town? And don't you think you needed a pruning? Well, you know, that made sense to me immediately. You needed a pruning. You know, that's the beauty of AA. We prune each other. All the time. And we need it. I just had a birthday party, and during the party, I could feel, you know, this ego going up. But it was my first party. I was not active in AA for the years that my husband was sick. And when I went back, Father Fred was speaking right after Ambrose died. And he said that I had been sober 21 years. And I looked up and I started counting, and I didn't hear the rest he said because I couldn't believe it. Because I have stayed sober one day at a time. That's what they told me. And I couldn't believe that I had been sober 21 years. And to me, I just don't think you can do this too much. I mean, just do it one day at a time. But this fellow in our group, some of you may know him, Joe J., all during the party, he could see me growing, you know. And he'd come over and he'd say, come down off of it. I said, well, Joe, I'm trying to be as humble as possible. And I was begging all the speakers, please, not to say anything nice about me and all this stuff. But I was feeling something, but I just wanted to have one party, and that's the only one I'm going to have. So I told the group at home that I'd have it when I was 25 years old. And if I didn't live, Robbie promised to have a wake and celebrate it anyway. And you can't imagine how surprised I was when I lived and he had arrived. So I have just had a ball in AA. And when anybody tells me this AA program is hard, it makes me sick. It is so much easier than the life we were living, the lies we were telling, the mess we were in. Why, good gracious life is just like falling off a log in comparison to what I was doing and the way I was living. That was hard. And I recommend it highly. I have enjoyed being here. I ramble. I guess you see it. I'm not a speaker. Oh, but when I first came into AA, I thought I was going to be one. Oh, yes, I thought I was going to be one. I could just see me going to all the conventions, you know, and all that. And you know that God handled it with all of the sickness I had and trouble. I couldn't go. And that kept me down. So he's handled everything for me. He really has, and he can handle it for you. I thank you.
Thank you, Selita, for a wonderful story. I thoroughly enjoyed that. And she is an inspiration. And 25 years sobriety just sounds wonderful to me. I think if I had 25, I would have to talk about it a little bit.
I have to say this. There's no pose in AA. Just one day.
That's for sure. But we appreciate her coming so much tonight. And thank you again for coming and sharing your experience with us.